Rift Accounting. The accountants of tomorrow, today. Riftaccounting.com.
If you need expert financial advice you can both understand and trust on your savings and investments, retirement planning, equity release, or life and health insurance, talk to the experts at Facts and Figures Chartered Financial Planners. Phone 01233 722 922 or check them out at www.fffp.co.uk. Facts and Figures. Independent financial advice everyone can follow. www.fffp.co.uk. I'm off blackjack, keep your hands off my
stack. Jobsinkent.com. Supplymybusiness.co.uk. Find suppliers and quote for work locally. Try us free until 1st of May 2016.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 24th of November. Not long to go now until the big day.
Well, I told you my sprouts are on. Oh, my microphone sounds so much better.
Yeah, I had a bit of a play around
quite
with it.
A little handy man, aren't you?
Yeah.
Actually, if you could nip round, I've got quite a few little jobs. A load of bulbs need fitting and things like that.
Right.
You wouldn't mind nipping around doing a few jobs?
Yeah, right. Okay, well, read an email now. You've got a mic to read it
now,
from.
Now, memory, this is the next Kent Creative Live group show. And it will open at the Pie Factory, Margate. Do you know about the Pie Factory?
I do indeed know about the Pie Factory. It's a community creative workspace.
I fancy going. Do they have pies?
No, they don't have pies. There's nothing to eat. It's an art facility.
But did it used to be a pie factory?
There's probably no reason why it was a pie factory before, no. It was probably called a pie factory because it's in Pie Street or, you know.
It's made me hungry now. Anyway, so it's on the 20th of November. Because a little bit of steak and kidney, doesn't it go down, don't you think? The show will display 70 pieces of work by Kent artists who responded to the theme memory, covering a variety of mediums, painting, sculpture, drawing, photography, textile, video and installations from personal to collective memories. All can be contemplated and enjoyed at this exhibition. So it's the Pie Factory in Margate, Broad Street, Margate. And that's Charlie Tango 9, 1, Egbert, Wilbur.
Oh, you made the mic go funny again.
And it's on the 20th to the 25th of November from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can go to their website, piefactorymargate.co.uk. You've turned me off. I don't know why I'm even talking.
No, I haven't turned you off. I was trying to stop it crackling.
I love a bit crackly, actually.
Yeah, we're going to have to share a mic again. I just want to read out again an email we read out last week from Steve Gull, who says, I'm involved with a kickboxing academy in Gillingham, Kent, with members ranging from age 3 to 72. I've been involved with this academy for more than 10 years. Unfortunately, our premises have been sold. So we are looking for a new home, and we are looking for an open plan space, office, small warehouse, industrial unit, or something similar that can be converted. The site must come with plenty of parking for all of our members. Ideally, we're looking for 2,500 square feet in the Medway area, anywhere between Raynham and Rochester. If you have a suitable space for long-term rent or know of someone that does, please would you let us know. We are desperate to find some new premises. You can get in touch with Steve. I've got an email address for him. It's Steve Gull, as in the seaside bird, G-U-L-L, Steve Gull at hotmail.com. That's the Paul Whiffin Kickboxing Academy in Gillingham. If you do have knowledge of space, if you are a commercial estate agent or you've got space to spare and you want to get in touch with Steve, you can either email Steve or get in touch with me at Bunker at Kent Business Radio and I will pass on your details to them. But they are desperate for some space, 2,500 square feet between Raynham and Rochester. Please.
And as Supply My Biz said, pop it on their website.
Yes, they did say that. I did drop Steve an email and tell him to do that. I don't know if he's done it yet. Your mic's now annoying me no end.
Rise above it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got. I'll tell you what. You read an email, and I'll find another tweet.
Okay. Excuse me, people. We're very flexible here, aren't we? This is Invicta Chamber, and it's about the Kent Food Forum, right up our street. This meeting is designed to promote the work of the engineering and science faculty, including the National Resources Institute of the University of Greenwich in Medway. Case studies from industry will be presented, and there'll be a plenary session to give participants the chance to interact with university staff and give their views on the type of support they need. This is at the Uni of Greenwich in Chatham. That's ME4, 4, T for Tiger, B for Bertie. It's 2 to 7pm. The member price is £10 and the non-member price is £15 plus VAT. It's on Tuesday the 1st of December, so that's a diary date. And it's Kent Food Forum at the Uni of Greenwich in Chatham.
Thank you for that. I've had a tweet from the lovely Lucy Owen. Do you remember Lucy?
I do.
Lucy was from Kent County Council. And she says, "Hi, Paul. Hope you're well. I was just wondering if you would mind helping us to promote a free event that KCC are holding on Friday the 27th of November. The event is for any woman in business or who is thinking of starting their own business that wants to learn more about Facebook and Twitter. The link to sign up is here. It's an Eventbrite link, which is Eventbrite /e/lunch-learn-session. And that has more information. I will put that link onto the Kent Business Radio website so that if you're a lady in business and you'd like to go to an informal KCC lunch, Lucy runs the Women's Business Unit at KCC. You can find her on Twitter. I do know her Twitter handle somewhere or other. It's Women Kent, I think. But I'll find it and I'll post that as well. So if you'd like to go along, do. Also, there's the last curry and beer of the year. Curry and beer night will be on Thursday, the 26th of November, 6:30 at the Rajmoney, which is 10 Plaistow Lane, Bromley. You know
the way
how
you say it.
What?
The Rajmoney. You make it sound like it's someone moaning. Raj, the Raj, isn't it? Sort of.
It's ethnic mush.
Yeah.
It's ethnic, that is.
I don't think it's Raj Moni.
It's ethnic mush. I grew up in Lewisham, that's only just round the corner from Bromley, and
really?
When they mention Bromley, I get all ethnic, don't I?
Yeah. Innit? All right, then. Go on then.
So it's a curry and beer, innit? All right. Curry and beer, innit? On the Raj Moni, 10 Plaistow Lane, Bromley. Okay? Go there.
Plaistow Lane, have a knees up.
It's not in the East End, it's in Bromley.
Well, yeah, but it's almost now, isn't it? It's getting that way.
Is it?
Yeah.
To book your place, you can call 01689 768 273.
You should speak like that all the time.
Or you can email carrie@caneandbeer.co.uk. That's CAINANDBEER, caneandbeer.co.uk, and you can book through their website too.
Stepping into 2016 with a... Oh, I've done that one. That's
Well, don't
Miriam
do it again, then. You've already done that.
Slip in. That's lovely, Miriam.
Looking to
McGurk.
Grow your business? Then the Kent Science Park has the answer. Come and experience the magic of speed networking this Christmas at Kent Science Park. All you need to bring is your business card and a winning two-minute pitch. If you've never been speed networking before, and it's an incredibly effective, fast-paced way of making new introductions, essential for small businesses, unlike other open networking events, you are guaranteed to speak to all the other delegates on a one-to-one basis by moving around the room and personally pitching your business offering. It costs a miserly £10 plus VAT. That includes a full English breakfast and refreshments, and it's taking place at the Kent Science Park, Sittingbourne, on the 3rd of December, from 7:30 in the morning until 10. And again, there's an Eventbrite link to book your place, which I will put on the community pages of Kent Business Radio so that you can find out about it. Cool. Do you know what we're going
to
do now?
Speak to our lovely guests.
I think we're going to speak to our next lovely guest. Mm. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker, Julie Anderson of RAP Office Contracts, and to welcome for the first time, with great pleasure, onto the Business Bunker show, Mr. Graham Raisey, the principal of East Kent College.
Hello.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Lovely to
They've
see you both.
They got a standing ovation, practically.
They did indeed, didn't they? They got lots of whoop-whoop and all kinds of stuff, which is really nice and quite right, too. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. We had a long discussion before we came on air about loads of things and about all kinds of things that we all feel passionate about. But I think the one thing that we all agree is we're passionate about young people and young people's skills and getting young people into the world of work. I guess if we kick off by hearing from Graham to start with, he can tell us a little bit about his college, for those of you that haven't heard of East Kent College. And if you haven't heard of them, I don't know where you've been, because they are one of the foremost colleges in the southeast of England, very well known for a lot of the things that they do, with some very famous alumni as well,
yes.
I do believe.
But of course, you did rebrand, didn't you, quite recently? So some people would know it as Thanet College.
That's
right. In the old days.
Yeah. That's right. We were Thanet Technical College back in the 60s and 70s, and became Thanet College and then East Kent College just over 2 years ago now. Mm. And we have campuses in Dover, Folkestone, Broadstairs, and now at Discovery Park.
Wow.
And you have some fabulous teachers there. I love them.
Yeah. We're famously known for catering and hospitality. Mm. Gary Rhodes is probably our most famous alumni, but now Nathan Outlaw, Richard Phillips, amongst others that are regularly on TV showcasing the work of the college.
And regularly in this studio, I might add, as well. Yeah, absolutely. But that's not all you do. You are, as you say, very well known for your catering and hospitality courses, but you do a whole range of courses. And the last time I was at the college, which was a while ago now, but I have been there a few times, but the last time I was there, I had a good look round your Peter Jones Entrepreneurs Suite as well. So maybe tell us a little bit about that too.
Yeah, so actually the college educates about 7,000 people a year.
Wow.
Ranging from 14, I think our oldest learner is 83.
Wow.
So
that's nearly as old as Paul.
Nearly, but not quite.
Yeah.
We do everything, from catering and hospitality, as I said before, but construction trades, service industries, business, IT, frankly, you name it, we do it. Mm. And what we do there is, take young people who've got a, absolute aspiration to work in a certain career and help them develop the skills whilst enabling them to get jobs in the workplace in their chosen profession.
Absolutely. So in your experience, in your opinion, Graham, what is it that we need to focus on here? We're not as bad as some parts of Europe where they have 50% plus youth unemployment, but we're running far too high at 16-17%. In your experience, where are we going wrong? What's happening? What do we need to do?
Well, I think if I had a pound for every business that's told me young people aren't what they are today as they were maybe 15, 20 years ago, I'd be a very, very rich man. Mm. I think the challenge is that much has changed in our society.
Absolutely.
Much has changed in our culture. That means actually the responsibility to develop young people and to allow them to become what they want to be is now a collective responsibility. Education can't solve that alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nor can parents, nor can businesses. Mm. It has to be a partnership. And I think that's where it works. I think where all of those things come together, works with that individual, then actually you see great results. Mm. But I think at times we've got a fragmented system.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think we need to encourage businesses and education to come much closer together, work together, long-term partnerships, not expecting a quick fix.
Absolutely.
Because there isn't one.
Absolutely.
Young people need to see career paths in front of them that they can aim for. And, to be frank, they need nurturing, they need developing, they need, kind of assisting on their journey.
Yeah.
And, some of them haven't got those, influences in their lives that enable them to do that. So
sure. Yeah.
I see that as our role in education, but also business play a huge part. Mm. I can talk till I'm blue in the face to young people sometimes about what it takes to become successful in business and hold down the job. The reality is businesses do it better.
Mm. Absolutely.
And they're believable.
Yeah.
And, their engagement in their education makes a huge difference. And I think that needs to be done so much more. But in Kent, that's a challenge.
Absolutely.
So many small businesses, micro businesses, focused on getting their job done.
Mm.
We've got to find ways to enable them to engage in the education process without it impacting on their daily lives.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I agree with you 100%. And it's interesting what you were saying, and I think this is the thing that frustrates me when I'm involved in this, is not enough people realise this on all sides of the equation here, that things have changed. And things have changed very rapidly. And because we're immersed in that change, we don't really see it. And I find it so frustrating to listen to people keep going on about O-levels in my day were this, that, or the other. And I go, oh, okay, fine. What internet browser were you using in 1954? And I go, what? You know, life moved on, it changed. What was useful in 1954 is not useful in 2004 or 2014 or indeed 2040. So we have to adapt to what we're doing. The only interesting thing is, when I was a kid, and okay, before she starts about how old I am, the fact is, when I was at school, which I only went briefly, but we had two choices in careers. When I went to see the careers teacher, they said, are you joining the army or are you working in the dockyard? There was nothing else to consider. Yeah, that was it.
When I went,
which
it was,
are you doing?
It was a telecoms, you know, what was it? The post office.
Yeah.
That was the be
postman.
All and end of. No, you know, the operators that used to work for the post office. That's how old I am.
Yeah.
That was
with the cords that you used to stick in those things. Oh,
yeah.
I remember. I saw a Pathé film about that once, yeah.
That was what every girl, that or being an air hostess, I think, were the sort of two things that you.
But that, you know. Careers weren't something that you considered. Yeah, you got a job, and you had
life.
Normally where you lived, there were one or two big employers. I grew up, although I'm a Londoner, I grew up in Maidstone, and at the time there was just paper mills. So you worked in a paper mill, or you joined the army, or you went and worked at the docks in Chatham, and then they shut
where
the docks
I was,
in Chatham.
Was Marconi? Do you remember Marconi?
Yeah, absolutely. But you knew him personally though.
Because you were with Einstein.
Yeah.
I think the job for life concept has gone.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I think the research now tells you that people change their job something like eight times or their career pathway eight times. And I think the role now of education is to prepare young people for that change.
Absolutely.
And not actually pigeonhole them down one route or another. And I think what we've got to be developing is more, you know, people call them softer skills. Actually, they're real skills.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we've got to be focused on that, not so much about saying, actually, do you know what, you're going to be a painting decorator for life, or you're going to be a computer programmer. Actually, we've got to start thinking about actually how their life's going to be, you know, for their whole working career and not just what their first job might be.
Absolutely. Again, I agree with you 100%. I do quite a few talks in schools and colleges, and I always talk about this. And one of the things that I get a little bit anti about is that there's a lot of people out there that do things like they say, find the thing you love and do it. And you think, hold on a minute, this person's 17 years old. The only thing they're interested in is men or women, football or fashion or singing, you know, and they ain't going to get a job doing any of those. You know, you're being unrealistic here. And also, what you said, which is smack on the nail, is we don't have careers any longer. Okay, there are one or two vocations. You might go into medicine. You might become a vet. You might become a dentist. You might become an architect. But that's a vanishingly small number of people. The rest of us kind of wallow along doing stuff. I love what I do now. I never set out knowing what I was going to do. I ended up here by complete accident. And I talk about a process of evolution, that what you need to do as a young person is get into the world of work at any point and at any level and then see where it goes. Now, because Jules will tell you how old I am, I actually started work in the computer industry about the same time as Charles Babbage. Okay. And when I first started in the computer industry, 40 years ago, there were two jobs, a computer operator and computer programmer. Today, in 2015, there are more than 700 different jobs in IT. Back in the day, I remember there being a big argument going on, because at the time, back in the 60s and the early 70s, the shipyards were closing, the mines were closing, the steelworks were closing, and everybody said, yeah, but we're inventing new technologies, and they went, they'll never employ as many people. Well, they were wrong. We employ five times as many people as we ever employed in the 70s. We have 31 million people at work now in a whole range of different jobs. And you're absolutely right, Graham. It's not about just one career choice. It's about understanding and exploring the world of work. So from your point of view as a college principal, I know, because we had this conversation, that you are geared to doing certain things because the government mandate you to do those. But from your point of view, specifically from an employment point of view, what would be the biggest benefit to you and your college?
Businesses getting involved.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. From the design of programs to designing the resources and telling us what resources are being used in their industry, to allowing the students to come and do meaningful work experience. And also, one of the best things is businesses setting real-life commissions. You know, they need a job done.
Yeah.
You know, come into the college, talk to students, and actually commission them to do pieces of work for them.
Absolutely.
Actually real. They'll learn much better if it's real.
Yeah.
And the example I use, we did, when London Array opened the Wind Farm, my performing arts students were commissioned to do the hosting piece when everyone came on board for their big celebration. And those students practice every single hour of every single day because it meant something. Actually, a few thousand people were going to watch that performance. Try to get them to practice for an assignment, really? Very, very difficult. And, you know, it needs to be real. And if it is real, I absolutely believe they will be passionate about what they do.
Yeah.
One of the things that's labelled at me by businesses, young people haven't got ambition. And I say to them, come to my college, see my students, see how much ambition they've got. They just need the opportunity to demonstrate it to you.
Absolutely. I see hundreds and hundreds of talented kids, hundreds and hundreds of them. They are as talented as they've ever been. Their approach to things is different because life is different nowadays, and they have different pools and different things that they can do. But you're absolutely right. And from my point of view, as a business person, one of the things that I spend an awful lot of my time is talking to other business people who moan like mad about the youth of today or, you know, the education system or whatever. And I go, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, at what point do you put something back into the system? If you want this from a school or a college, how are they ever going to know if you don't tell them or show them or make them understand or give them the opportunity to prove it? Why don't you go and interact with your local schools and colleges? Because they're all welcome you with open arms. And it's difficult. Of course, it's difficult, as Hamish was saying earlier, about finding time to do work programs can be difficult. But we're talking about the future here, the future of business, society, community, all kinds of things.
Industry.
We all have a need to put something back into that, and we need to do that. I want to kind of bring Julie into the conversation because I know Julie's as passionate about this as me. Julie runs RAP Office Contracts, a construction and fit-out company. Julie, from your point of view, as a construction business owner, what's your thoughts and feelings on bringing up? I know you employ a number of apprentices in different fields, but what's your thoughts and feelings about the whole thing?
Well, we find in Fit Out that there is an ageing workforce on site. So the average age of...
Jules has been around your place, hasn't she?
She's an apprentice.
I looped around.
Yeah. Putting up a bit of wallpaper.
And so the average age of somebody on site is between 45 and 50, which is great.
I wasn't there then. Yeah.
Which is great now. That's fine. But it's really hard to try and get subcontractors into the mentality of taking on young people. Because, whenever you take anyone on, whether it's a young person or somebody over 30, you've still got to put time into them. And where everything's so fast-paced on site, and the world is like now, and you've got clients wanting it now, everybody's rushing. And it's finding the thing that will make the subbies take on the apprentices, because a lot of people like my company don't necessarily employ 20 painters and 20 partition fixers. We're using subcontract labour.
Yeah, sure.
And you can't expect a young person to come out of school and deal with all the paperwork and the CSCS system. So it's better for them to get training under the wing of a subbie. And we encourage our subbies, but they're still saying, well, we don't know how to deal with the paperwork, and oh God, you've got to fill all this stuff in, and do you go to the KCC, or do you go to Construction Industry Training Board, or do you go to Track where you can share an apprentice? And there's like too many choices.
Yeah.
And when everything's fast, fast, money, get it done on time, there isn't anybody there to actually mentor companies through the process of taking on an apprentice, because you want to do it right, and there's too much of it going wrong, and apprentices being paid dreadful wages.
Absolutely. One of the problems, and this is me saying this as my opinion rather than trying to put you guys on the spot with it, but one of my big problems with this is that government initiatives are normally geared around big organisations that have huge HR departments and people that specialise in this. And as we all know, big business is dead in the water. It's jobs negative. All of the job creation in this country is with SMEs, and they don't have those kind of things. They don't have the wherewithal for all this, and that is causing a lot of the problem here, is these things are designed for organisations that don't use them, and the ones that do want to use them can't use it because the design's all wrong.
Yeah, because you haven't got somebody necessarily dedicated to just going through training or HR in small businesses. You've got somebody doing a bit of everything.
And absolutely. And normally the business owner that's doing all of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very difficult. And in the construction industry, we're concerned about the skills shortages, you know, for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to be a busy 10 years for the construction industry.
Absolutely.
So I think, as a group in the Kent Construction Focus Group, we're all quite concerned, trying to find ways around it. But there's still too many of us trying to find ways around it, and we don't really know how to solve it.
Absolutely.
Getting involved with colleges is really good. So Graham needs to open one in Maidstone, really, but because a lot of us, you know, could offer opportunities to Graham's students, but are they going to want to come from Thanet to work in Maidstone, Kent jobs? You know, it's a long way. And
transport is always a thing when you're young anyway.
Yeah. Well, on £2, whatever it is, an hour.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Not only where we are now on Romney Marsh has one of the highest areas of unemployment on the marsh. Mm. 8 miles over there is Ashford, which can't get staff for love nor money. Is there a bus service between the two? Of course there's not. Mm. You know, so you've got all these people sat here unable to work. We're 8 miles away, people desperate for workers. It's just nonsense. I want to come back to Graham and bring him into this. And Graham, from your point of view, how much leeway do you have as an individual college in the kind of courses that you offer?
We're completely autonomous, independent bodies. So we can literally do the courses that we need to do for our locality.
Right, okay.
And I think you were talking earlier about, you know, the limited choices you had when you were at school.
Yeah.
Actually, that's what a local college is for.
Yeah.
A local college is there to create the skills for the local industry.
Yeah.
It's not there to create it for Scotland, it's there to create it for Kent.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it's not doing what it needs to do for its locality, to be frank, it's not doing its job properly.
Sure.
Taking the, you know, the point about construction, there are over 2,000 young people training in the construction trades in Kent, in colleges now.
Right.
The difference is there's a gap. There's a gap between doing construction training within a college environment and that which is needed for industry.
Yeah.
And there is a gap. The only way that gap is going to be filled is if those young people get some experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that doesn't have to be apprentices, although you hope that once they've had that experience, companies will take them on as apprentices. But the reality is they need experience.
Mm.
You know, my young people building a brick wall in a workshop will only go so far.
Yeah.
But actually, that's not a real wall, because it gets knocked down at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So one way we're trying to do it is actually get our students working on community projects.
Yeah.
Actually real things. So, you know, we just renovated Sandwich Cricket Club as an example.
Fantastic.
Real project that actually had a real outcome. And and believe me, the wall's still going to be there, hopefully, in 10 years' time.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Because back in the day, and I mean way back in the day, like medieval, you had guilds. And the whole way that it worked, as a tradesperson or a craft person, one of the first things you did is you had an apprentice. Yeah. Now, you know, even when I was a kid, which wasn't in the Middle Ages, there were still those kind of city and guild apprenticeships, and nearly every one of my friends went into a city and guild's apprenticeship of one kind or another, being motor mechanics, panel beaters,
brickmakers. You could be a butcher's apprentice.
You could be any kind of apprentice. Yeah. You can now. You can be any kind of apprentice now. Yeah. It's even broader now than it was then, because back in the day then, they tended to be trade-based apprenticeships. You can do an apprenticeship in absolutely anything now. But what I'm thinking about isn't from the educational point of view, it's from the usage point of view. I don't understand why businesses aren't making more use of apprentices. I'm following up on Julie's point about subcontractors and stuff like that. So plumbers and painters and decorators and bricklayers and stuff like that. Why don't they have an apprentice? Somebody's got to carry the bucket. You know, back in my day, that's what an apprentice did. An apprentice made them up, carried the bucket, made the tea, did all those kind of things. And, you know, for their £4 a week or whatever they were paid back then, they learnt a trade at the hands of someone that was a craftsperson.
And I think, you know, what Julie says is the system's complicated.
Mm.
You know, and actually for a small business, it is very complicated. And it'd be wrong of me to come on the show and say, actually, you know what, this is really easy. Actually, my view is let someone else take the strain from you.
Yeah.
You have a local college. They all have business development units. They all understand these grants and systems inside out. You need to use them. Now, and if they're not doing that role well, then go and find somebody else.
Yeah.
But there are people there with resources to take that strain away from the micro and small businesses. Now, what's going to be announced tomorrow in the Comprehensive Spending Review is a new apprenticeship levy, where large businesses are going to pay, and it's forecasted, it'll be 0.5% of their staff pay costs into a levy,
right,
which will then will create a voucher system for businesses to be able to take that voucher, go to their local college and go, I want an apprentice in this and I've got a voucher to be able to do it, which we hope will completely take all of the unnecessary bureaucracy out of the system.
Right.
I hope going forward that, you know, working with local businesses, we can have lots more apprentices, because that's the government ambition, to have 3 million by 2020.
Right. So that's interesting. Let's just explore that a moment. So this proposed voucher scheme, basically, it means that you, as an employer, you can go wherever you want. You don't go through any rigmarole of finding different suppliers and working out different monies. You go, there's my voucher. Give me someone.
Absolutely right. And the detail, the devil will be in the detail, I'm absolutely sure, when Osborne announces his statement tomorrow. But that, in the simplistic terms, that's exactly what it is.
Right.
And, you know, from my point of view, you know, that relationship between local business and the local college is actually critical to making that work.
Mm.
Because, you know, my job, and I'm unapologetic about it, almost didn't get that out, is that actually my role is to support the local businesses. And if I don't do that, then actually I failed in what I'm trying to achieve.
Absolutely.
But how hands-on can your college be? I mean, for example, with Judy's fast pace, you know, decorators and people putting up stuff, could you have someone on site, for example, with the apprentice to help or not?
Yeah, I take my paint and decorating department. I've got 80 young people studying paint and decorating now, all ultimately looking for an apprenticeship or looking for a job. And, you know, they're wishing to do that as quickly as they possibly can.
Yeah.
You know, the days of, you know, studying for multiple years as a student, they're long gone. They want to get out there and they want to be working. So the reality is, you know, what we've got to do is try and match Julie's needs with a young person, and away we go. The challenge is, of course, painting and decorating isn't done in every college. So, you know, if it's not done at the Maidstone College, then Julie might have to go slightly further afield. Because you can't do everything everywhere.
No, absolutely.
And that's a challenge for all the colleges.
Yeah.
But the reality is there will be someone local, and it might even be a private training provider, but someone locally will be able to work with RAP and, you know, solve their problems, as other businesses I know have got similar challenges.
Absolutely. I'm fascinated in this, though, because when I was growing up, there was quite a connection between local business and colleges, and that seems to have tailed off over the years, and I'm not entirely sure why that would happen. You might have some thoughts on
that. Well, it's difficult to come on radio and say my sector wasn't very good, but actually the reality was the way government policy was pushing colleges was as a qualification factory.
Yeah.
It actually stopped forgetting about skills and it dealt with qualifications.
Yeah.
And, of course, businesses don't care about qualifications.
No.
They care everything about skills.
Yeah.
And I think that was the mismatch. And I think, actually, businesses got a bit sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
Was the reality.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we are moving back towards a skills-based system.
Yep.
Absolutely delighted to see, you know, Mid-Kent College win 2 gold medals, you know, in skills areas. And I had 9 of my own students at the finals. Unfortunately, we didn't medal, but to see their
skills...
You
got some distinctions, though, did you
not? We got some highly commended, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And, that, you know, 8 regional winners, which is which is great. But, you know, people need to go and see the skills show.
Yeah.
You know, up at the NEC every year, the skills that are on display there are absolutely tremendous. From, you know, kind of landscape gardening to computer networking to painting and decorating, you know, the skills being displayed, you know, would actually put some of these businesses right.
Yeah.
And that's not about qualification.
No, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
That's about high technical skill, which is actually our job. Now, of course, it is my responsibility to make sure they get a qualification because that's what we're paid for.
Yeah.
And to be frank, you know, it's important that they do because that needs to be transferable throughout their life and career. But the main important thing is they develop the skills that those local industries need and desire.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'll feel better when local businesses knock on my door and say, who's coming through? Who's your next graduate? I'll take them. I don't need to interview them. I know your quality. And I'll take them tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great recommendation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's where we should get back to, isn't it? That we can rely on that, and we've got a faith in the system. Or not the system, per se, because one of the things I really liked about what you said, Graham, is that the local college... Oh, we got a phone call. That the local college is about dealing with people locally. Let's just track this phone call and see who it is. It might not even be for on air. Hi, you're on the Business Bunker Show. Hello. Hello, you're on the Business Bunker Show.
Hello, it's Martin White calling.
Hello, Martin. Martin, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, sorry you couldn't hear me.
No, that's all right, I can hear you now.
Are you volunteering to be an apprentice?
Well, I was really just listening into that conversation and you know, picking up on something that Graham was saying about the fact that he wants sort of local small businesses to be knocking on his door.
Yep.
To find out, you know, what the... who the most sort of recent graduates and apprentices are that are sort of out there looking for, you know, for training programs. And what I was very keen to do was to buy my business from very early on was to actually try and get, and not just businesses, not just small businesses involved with Supply My Business, but to actually get apprenticeships and training providers like East Kent College and Mid Kent College and... you know, all the sort of further education providers really on board so that they could actually feature and advertise their apprenticeships and training programs through us.
Right, okay.
To our small business community who can then, you know, see that, pick up on that and do exactly what Graham wants them to do, which is, you know, pick up the phone and get in touch. So my question really is to Graham... you know, who do I need to talk to at East Kent College to have that discussion about getting your training and apprenticeship programs actually featured on our website free of charge so that we can let our small business community know that you're out there?
Okay, so our business development manager is Tracy Searle, and it's Tracy without an E, dot Searle, S-E-A-R-L-E, at eastkent.ac.uk. Or you can come direct to me, and my email address is on our website.
Brilliant. Okay, well, expect a follow-up phone call or email from me then, because I think we're all agreed that small businesses, in terms of the opportunity for apprenticeships, and small businesses that I work with directly are already engaged with apprentices in their business. So it just makes sense to, you know, to push that as much as we can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Martin, thank you for calling in. Always a pleasure to hear from you.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Cheerio, bye.
Cheers, bye.
Bye-bye.
Martin White there, local businessman. Absolutely, I think at the end of the day, what we're trying to do here is to re-establish the connection between local businesses and their local colleges. You have made the point very eloquently that as a principal of a local college in East Kent, you are prepared to work with employers in the East Kent area, and you're prepared to look at providing skills training in the areas relevant to the kind of businesses there. That's all we need, isn't it, really? It's not any harder than that. Yeah, Hamish.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I was talking to a chairman of a manufacturing company, a man called Paul Winter, who very active in Kent and very pro-engineering.
Right.
And he was telling me that the average age of an engineer is 58.
Yeah.
And that the average age is going up by something like 3 or 4 years every year.
Absolutely.
He can't get engineers.
Absolutely. I had an engineering company in Sevenoaks that actually bribed a 70-year-old to come back to work because they had not enough skills. In fact, in that particular instance, the 70-year-old was brought back to train some of their apprentices. But, you know, there's a massive skills gap, and there has been, especially in STEM skills, science, technology, engineering and maths, there's been a massive gap in that over the last 20 or 30 years, you know, as everybody piled into other types of work. And it's kind of... We're now having some real skill shortages.
I think the other issue, though, that we really do need to discuss is how do we inspire the next generation to want to work in that industry?
Exactly.
Because I think
yeah.
there's a supply and a demand, and, yeah. and I can put the supply of courses on
yeah.
that meets local industry needs, but you've got to have young people wanting to go into that sector.
Yeah.
And businesses really do have a responsibility to inspire yeah. the next generation.
Absolutely.
And I know Paul very well, because I sit on the local enterprise partnership with him. Okay. And he's always talking about, you know, the lack of next generation. And my dad actually just had his 70th birthday, and he's a turner by trade, and he's still, you know, asked to do work on a regular basis because they haven't got the skills
yeah.
But young people need to be inspired to do those yeah. jobs, work yeah. in that industry.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, actually, you know, we'll have more people wanting to do trades that maybe aren't related to, you know, the opportunities there, or there are opportunities, but actually miss some of the other opportunities there. So we've got to inspire the next generation.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You know, one of the big problems you've got when you go into schools and colleges and you talk to young people, that they can only deal with what they see in front of them. And unfortunately, we're fed a diet of X Factor, you know, Britain's Got Talent, and The Apprentice, which is the worst programme on TV, and all of those kind of things. And that's their only experience, because that's all you see. So when they go, you know, what do you want to do? And they go, I want to be a singer. But they've got no other experience to base anything on. They've got, you're absolutely right. And that can only come from businesses. It can't come from anywhere else. We need more and more businesses to go into schools and colleges and to sell their industry, to sell their business as a place to work, as an exciting place, as something where things are happening, where stuff's going on. There is lots of really exciting stuff, and there's hundreds of really exciting employers. You know, I could reel off dozens of employers in that field in Kent. You know, people like ITL, a small company in Ashford that make cancer scanners, Flamboyants in Ramsgate that make rubber doodads, yeah. and a massive in 3D printing and stuff like that. Exciting stuff. There's loads of exciting stuff happening in those kind of marketplaces. But unless businesses come and tell young people, how will they ever know? And the thing is the world of work is so diverse now that, you know, you can't just leave it for somebody to work out for themselves. It's not possible. I'm 60 years of age. I still haven't got a clue what I want to do. Why a 17-year-old should know, I have no idea. You know, it's nonsense, isn't it? You're absolutely right, Graham. I totally 100% agree with you.
And people just make up job titles now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
there are tens and tens of thousands of jobs. I'm good at it in my own organisation. Yeah. I want to change something, just make up a new job title.
Exactly.
But young people don't understand what they are.
No.
They understand sectors and they understand areas, but really no idea,
yeah.
you know, what a turner is or what a miller is.
Well, if you look at all the old Victorian buildings, which will always need renovation, and we're losing the craftsmen and the skills, you know, for that sort of thing, the old stonework and the stonemason, all of that will just go.
Yeah. Did you know the UK has the world silver medalist in stonemasonry?
I did not know that.
Yeah. And, you know, true facts. And there are colleges, you know, who teach stonemasonry.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the key, but it's almost hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for young people, someone's got to demystify what the jobs are, what the local industry is, and where the opportunities are.
It's about doing two things, as far as I'm concerned. It's about going into colleges and doing presentations saying, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. But more than that, it's about taking the kids out of the college and going, you come down my place and I'll show you. You come and spend a day with me. You come and spend a week with me and you see what we do. Yeah, Hamish.
Maybe you should get a couple of kids to come along to the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, we have done that in the past. We had some students from some schools in Rochester came on last year. We have, in fact, also...
It was with Lisa Marie, wasn't it?
Settle. Yeah. Lisa Marie Settle, who's very involved. She runs a company called Telcare. She's very involved with her local schools. We went to an event that they staged, which was like a Dragon's Den Open Day type of thing. And four of the students actually then came on the show and told us about their experiences of doing that and stuff like that. As it happens, we also have a young DJ that was in one of our training programs here, which we used to do back in the day, and they have a full-time show now actually on the station too. A young lad called Jack Biffle, who is 17 and does the early Sunday morning show, and Jack's really brilliant and we're really pleased with him. We could talk about this forever. It's a big subject. I'm as keen as you are to get businesses involved in our local education establishments. We're going to continue to put that message But for the moment, Graham Rosie of East Kent College, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. The absolutely delightful, as always, Julie Anderson of ROP Office Contract.
Thank you.
Pleasure to speak to you both. We will come back to this when we've got some more time and talk about it some more, because it's a very important subject. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed. We're kind of fast running out of time. The microphone's still playing up, and now my screen's playing up. Blimey, it's all going off here. But it's now that time for...
Channel Radio News Update.
It's the Federation of Small Business News Update. There's some new guidance about zero-hour contracts have been published. The Department for Business and Skills has published guidance for employers about zero-hour contracts and how they should be used appropriately. The guidance provides examples of the best practice, such as clearly advertising that a job role will be under a zero-hour contract and that the hours will not be guaranteed. It also states that late cancellation of work is unacceptable except in truly unavoidable circumstances. Suggested alternatives to zero-hour contracts are outlined in the guidance. You can find out all about these new snippets by going to the Kent Business Radio website and looking at the on the blog for news update, where these and other updates will take place, Jules.
Small firms dissatisfied with legal profession. So small firms dissatisfaction, bless you, with legal services providers has remained unchanged over the last 2 years. Research published by the Legal Services Board, the LSB, has indicated... In 2013, LSB research revealed that just 13% of small firms believe lawyers are cost-effective, and a survey of 10,528 small firms earlier this year produced the same result. Many of the firms recently questioned said they went to an accountant rather than a lawyer for legal help, and around 1 in 2 described lawyers as a last resort. FSB Skills, this is on the 3rd of December, so it's a diary date, 12:30 to 3:30. It's at the Longfield Academy in Longfield, Kent. That's D for Digital, A for Arnie, 3, 7, P for Peter and H for Harry. 30 businesses and 30 students will be thrown together at the first FSB Skills 3030 event. If you're looking to recruit, care about your next employee and the future workforce, then this event is for you. Details will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic. Couple of things coming up. There's Small Business Saturday, which will be taking place this year on the 5th of December. That's Saturday, the 5th of December. There is a way that you can get involved as a small business in Kent. The FSB are running a series of FSB Small Business Saturday initiatives. What we'd like you to do is hold up a board with the hashtag SmallBizSatUK and the hashtag FSBKent and your company name on it. And take a selfie and post it with those two hashtags. There will be some prizes available for the quirkiest, the funniest, or the most. We're not sure yet.
Good idea.
Yeah. Also, celebrating Britain's SME businesses, the FSB, in conjunction with WorldPay, have the WorldPay Business Awards, and they are now open for nominations. Proudly presented by the Federation of Small Business and WorldPay, the awards return for the third year and applications are open until the 18th of December. There are loads and loads of categories to enter, and each category winner gets a £2,000 prize, and the overall winner gets a £12,000 prize. So very worthwhile. If you want to find out more about it or you wish to enter or nominate someone, if you go to the website, which is www.fsb.org.uk/update. I'll do that again in English. fsb.org.uk/update and find out all about the FSB WorldPay SME Business Awards.
Auto-enrolment. If you only do one thing, check your staging now. Like it or not, the auto-enrolment legalisation draws nearer for all employers. This will not go away, you're warned. It's very important for you and your business, and we're letting you know what you must do. Check your staging date. Auto-enrolment affects all UK employers with at least one member of staff. As an employer, you've got a compulsory staging date, which you must comply with the new legalisation. Find yours now by entering your unique PAYE reference number into the staging date calculator on our website. And this is from, I'll read out the website, 3Ws.F for Freddie, S for Sugar, B for Bertie, pensionservices.co.uk/staging-date calculator. At your workplace, pensions staging date and every payday afterwards, you must also assess your workforce, categorise them, provide compliant documentation and keep records. It could be a headache, they say, but not when you put your trust in the FSB workshop workplace pensions. And as usual, all details of that will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk website.
That was nicely read.
Shall I read one last one?
No, I've got a couple.
Okay.
There's a consultation process on business rates appeal system. The Department for Communities and Local Government has launched a consultation on proposals to improve the appeal system for business rates. A straightforward three-stage appeals process has been proposed, and the consultation is open until the 4th of January 2016. Marcus Jones, Minister for Local Government, said the business rates appeal process has been in a decades-long deadlock, hampered by some unscrupulous agents making speculative appeals. Sometimes for businesses unaware that this is even being done on their behalf. So we want to put a stop to that. We want to have a proper business rates review. It's well overdue. It's causing enormous problems to small businesses, especially in the high street. You can find out more about this and you can go to the government website where you can participate in this process by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/news update, and there is a whole series of things with links to the various government websites where you can participate in these events. Jules, you can read one more, and then I've got one more, and that's it.
Okay, so European Parliament plans corporate tax reform. The European Parliament's Special Committee on Tax Rulings has voted to adopt its recommendations for making corporate taxes in the EU fairer and more transparent.
About time.
MEPs, thanks to my heckler here, MEPs intend to push ahead with ambitious plans to promote comprehensive EU tax reform, and the committee's measures are intended to prevent multinationals from moving profits to low tax jurisdictions. Have I got your teeth?
Yeah.
Within the EU. This will be achieved through the use of tax rulings so that loopholes and contradictions within the EU's 28 national tax laws are closed. MEPs are basing their recommendations on the principle that multinational companies should pay their taxes where they make their profits. Apart from the loss of public income, it is considered unfair that big companies pay very little tax on their profits, while small and medium-sized firms have to pay their full share.
Absolutely.
We can think of a few, can't we?
Absolutely. It's long overdue. I mean, it's absolutely long overdue. And it took a big campaign of people saying, you know, that various multinationals were paying two-thirds of nothing in corporation tax because they'd been moving their jurisdiction around, and it was obvious. And the EU started, as they normally do on small businesses, by introducing a ridiculous set of guidelines called VAT MOS, which were just insanity. They were so stupid that they haven't even managed to fine anybody for breaking them yet. But they've eventually got round to doing what they should have done all along, which is to tackle this system, because this is the biggest abuse of the system, and it needed to happen, and about time too.
Yes.
There's a two-year plan to increase take-up on R&D tax relief. HM Revenue and Customs has announced a two-year plan to increase take-up of research and development tax relief amongst small businesses. Measures will focus primarily on increasing awareness and making it easier for firms to apply for this type of tax relief. For example, HMRC will publish improved guidance to help increase firms' understanding of the R&D tax relief and provide business certainty through the Advanced Assurance Scheme. You can find out more about it by going to the same page on the Kent Business Radio website. .co.uk/news update and finding out about that. That is the end of
Channel Radio News Update.
We're fast approaching the end of the show with only 2 minutes left. I've got a very important tweet to read out from the lovely Laura Burton Lawrence of the Community Show. She says, "Hi Paul and Jules, we're running a ticket competition for Cinderella. at Tunbridge Wells. Please, can you give us a shout out? Much love, L&R. You can find out about it by following them on the Twitter, community_show, or indeed by listening to their radio show, which is the community show, which is on Thursdays at 10 a.m. And it's a show geared to Kent-based charities, not-for-profits, and social companies doing lots of things in the community. So do have a listen to that, and do find out about how to win your free Cinderella tickets.
Yes, and the handsome barrister broker, of course, is on that show.
We've had a tweet from the lovely Jodie Lawler in Canterbury. She says, I'm an apprentice. I'm doing an e-commerce apprenticeship, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I really do appreciate the opportunity.
Oh,
that's lovely. So thank you for that,
Jodie.
And thank you for sharing that with us. It's really important. That we hear from young people as well, as Hamish made reference to earlier. We have also recently, in fact, while we were talking about that, had a young entrepreneur on the show, young Mr. Ben Towers,
yeah.
Who's now well old. He's 17 now. He's been in business since he was 11, has 15 employees, and he's a bit of a superstar for being a young entrepreneur, but Ben's been on the show as well. We've had loads of tweets, but I'm afraid we're kind of running out of time. So I just want to tell you now... about what's coming up later on Channel Radio. At 4 o'clock, we have the lovely Natalie Benaig with a brand new show. It's the third in a series of brand new show called Kent Creative Live. It's a show about the arts and creative industries in and around this lovely county of ours. Fabulous show. And she's got two fantastic guests. And then coming up right after that, we have... At 7 p.m. we have Mr. Jamie Andrews with the New Potato Show, 18 tracks of unsigned new up-and-coming music. That is immediately followed by I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, a 60s-based comedy programme that is also new to the show, to the station.
And I haven't heard that.
Have you not? You need to listen to
I
that.
I will.
Last week they were mentioning My Blue Rinse for some reason. I have no idea where they got that
well,
from.
You haven't got enough to put blue on, have you?
No, exactly. And then we're going to round off the end of tonight's entertainment on Channel Radio with this.
It's Club Culture with Boy George. One.